wish, and maybe I'm blind, thinking I can see through this and see what's behind. Got no way to prove it, so maybe I'm lying. But I'm only human after all. I'm only human after all. Don't put your blame on me. Don't put your blame on me. Take a look in the mirror, and what do you see? Do you see it clearer, or are you deceived in what you believe? 'Cause I'm only human after all, and you're only human after all. Don't put the blame on me. Don't put your blame on me. Don't ask me to lie and beg for forgiveness for making you cry, for making you cry. 'Cause I'm only human after all. I'm only human after all. Don't put your blame on me. Don't put the blame on me. Oh, some people got the real problems. Some people out of love. Lord, heavens above. I'm only human after all. I'm only human after all. Don't put the blame on me. Don't put the blame on me. I'm only human. I made mistakes. I'm only human. It's all it takes to put the blame on me. Don't put the blame on me.
Hello, Devon. I'm only human after all. You've tuned in to 102.5 FM, you silly things. Oh, thank you, our fabulous listeners. That was the Rag and Bone Man and Human. I remember my sister flagging that song up a few years ago and saying, have you heard the Rag and Bone Man? I said, oh, not for many moons. No, not that one that used to come to our house. The Pop Man. And there it is. It just came up. I thought, oh, I'll have to play that. So, yes, this is Julie Mullen on The Kate Cole Show. That's the door flying open. And today, Colin Large has honestly just made the most amazing cake of music, because we have composer, musical director, and some, and so many aspects of music, Mr. Alistair Gavin in the house. That's at 9:20, coming all the way from lovely London, on the telephonic communicator. And then at 9:45, we've got our in-house poet in residence, Liv Talk, coming from Vroom. So what more could you honestly want? Here's a little bit of France. And Mike Oldfield.
Queen of
Mr. Mike Oldfield, and to France. And that's going out to Christine and Jeffrey, who have landed in Devon, on our Devon shores, and they are currently languishing at Bantham Beach, darlings. Oh, hello, Christine. Hello, Mr. Jeffrey. Oh, and Maisie, their dog. Oh, I blew her a kiss last night. So, yeah, we've got an exciting show. So thank you to all our fabulous regular listeners on the Cakel Show in Totnes. Hello. You've got your woofers and tweeters out. Thank you. And to those lovely people in Dartington too. And to anyone else who's done the clicky online thing. Well, you are gorgeous. And you could be anywhere in the world. You could be in Londondon or Chelmsford or Budley Salterton. I don't know why I said that in such a northern twang. Or perhaps you're in Salt Lake City, miles and miles away. Or Peru. Or New York. Are you in New York? Sorry, are you in New York? Wherever you are hanging your hat this fine Devon morning, then there's such a huge welcome here. Plus, fabulous guests, of course, in the shape of composer and musical director, and I will go into it all shortly, but meantime, I think we should have a little taste of Alistair Gavin. What do you taste like, Alistair? Let me just check. Oh, bit of toast, jelly, custard. Oh, Eccles cake. You taste of an Eccles cake. What's going on? This is Alistair Gavin on 102.5 FM, if you don't mind. Drive. You can find all Alistair's music on SoundCloud. But meantime, let's get to it. Okay, so he has, he's describing himself as a keyboardist, composer, record producer, arranger, sound artist. But if you go into the bank of his CV, you will see that he's also an actor, a singer, a vocal coach. He gives private instrumental teaching. He's a lecturer. He's worked with the greats, Michael Nyman, Paul McCartney, Frank Zappa. Just a huge list of Elvis Costello. My God. And he was the musical director on Mamma Mia as well. So we're going to get into a conversation at 9:20 with this dude. And let's have a little bit of abandon, shall we? I'm giving you a taster of his music. If you heard the words "be good" during the first song, that was me talking to the puppy. Sorry about that. I'm going to leave you with Abandon. Drive, Abandon, and we're going to have a little soupçon of the third piece that Alistair sent me, and thank you, Alistair, for that. And this is called Walls. Thank you. I don't mind admitting I've gone into a hypnotic reverie. Wow, I love that one. Walls. So you have been listening to You Drive, Abandon and Walls, composed by Alistair Gavin, who is my 9:20 interview this morning. And then don't forget, more poetry with our poet in residence, Liv Torke. But thank you for sending me that music, Alistair. That's brilliant. Thank you very much. Now, okay, to get us in the mood for Alistair, what do you want? What would you like? I think you should have a little bit of Morning Passengers. Passages, sorry. Do you want Morning Passages or not? That's not Morning Passages. Oops. That's professionalism. Here it is. A little bit of Philip Glass. Morning Passages by Mr. Philip Glass, bringing us to that moment where we have to get on the blower. Now we've plumped for the old-fashioned telephone. Oh dear, it sounds a bit bumpy, but let's have a go. These are replacement phones as well, she says, talking about mundane things. Let me just, this is... Hello. Oh, hello. Is it Alistair?
Julie.
Ah, good morning to you and welcome to 102.5 FM Sound Art Radio. We've just been listening to a soupçon of your music, You Drive, Abandon and Walls. And Walls just sent me into a hypnotic reverie.
Oh, that's good. That's what it's supposed to do.
Now, do you know, these are brand new phones, and yet they're still a bit clunky. But we'll try and we'll see how it goes. But I might have to call you on the other messenger thing. Well, let's have a go anyway.
Are you hearing me loud and clear?
Okay, brilliant. So, Alistair Gavin, good morning. Now, tell us a little bit where you're located this morning.
Well, I'm at the top of our house, looking out over... towards Muzzle Hill Golf Course, and from one window and the other window, looking towards Alexandra Palace.
So you're in the Londra. You're one of those exciting people that doesn't live in the countryside with a bucket of dung on their head like me. But you live in the racy London. Oh my God!
Yeah, London Don. You've just called it
London Don. So. Yeah. Alistair, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about your career, but you have like this extraordinary CV covering so many aspects of music, but not just that, but you have the skill of acting as well behind you. So is it like a huge paint pot of what you...
So just tell me where you got the acting from. I was intrigued by that one. But, you know, otherwise... Everything is sort of true that you read out. Maybe I just dropped acting in just out of desperation.
Just to sort of fill in,
put an extra word in.
Oh, that's hysterical. I slightly don't believe you. I believe you're a fine Shakespearean actor. So I wanted to talk about your days on Mamma Mia and what it was like being the musical director over there.
Well, just I should stress that I was a musical director.
Okay.
I was the sort of officially the assistant, and I had a boss who was the musical director. But yes, I did have to take over, you know, a couple of times a week, and sort of when musical director was on holiday. And so, yes, I had that role, and it was a fantastic job.
Can you kind of describe, you know, because what in my head, I'm not quite sure I'm assuming you rehearse the cast, and as you say, you take over and then run the music on the main Mamma Mia show with the big stage in London and all that. Was it stressful doing certain aspects of that, or was it actually quite plain sailing kind of thing?
Well, I mean, there's different stresses and you know, I think it is a stressful thing to conduct a show in the West End, and especially as it was the first time I'd ever done it, you know, when I took that job. But, you know, my boss, Marcus, kindly sort of had faith. And also, I think in the West End, keyboard players expect to do a bit of musical directing, because a lot of shows are directed from a keyboard. So it's a kind of, it's a familiar path in the West End for a keyboard player to do some musical directing. But, you know, it's... I mean, I saw my job as really, you know, on a long-running show, obviously, you know, you're doing the same thing night after night, broadly. And obviously, each show feels very different with each different audience. So there is the excitement of, you know, performing to a fresh group of people every night. But I think I felt it important that I kind of was a sort of source of good vibe and positivity and energy, and just kept up spirits and just encouraged people to put it out there in a really sort of energized way. And, you know, obviously the band would need you to give them decent cues for starting songs and indeed ending them. And the cast need, you know, in the early days where all the backing vocals were live, you know, there was quite a lot of cueing the singers in the booths. But still, you are, you know, you are cueing the singing, and you're just being a kind of good sort of vibey presence, really, in front of the cast, you know, because you're visible by both. And, you know, we have that wonderful magic trick where you know, the audience think the cast are looking lovingly at them, but in fact they're staring at the monitors hung down from the from the balcony.
Brilliant.
You know, when they need to, obviously.
That's a little piece of magic.
An amazing job and a real privilege.
God, I bet. So what was it like? Because obviously I know people because of being in the acting business for 20-odd
like
years.
Yeah,
like you. Exactly. We love Shakespeare, we do. But what was it like? You know, because I know that I've never done it myself, been, you know, on the West End and done that kind of off to work, hey-ho, you know, getting your 6:30 call and then finishing at 10-ish, whatever. And then, but the stories I hear are that everyone has to wind down and so literally go and party. So were you partaking of the party with the ensemble, or was it strictly, oh my God, I've got to get home, I'm shattered?
I think the party thing is no more, in my experience, is no more than a pint after work.
Yeah.
Like everybody, really.
Sure,
and,
of course.
Yes, you are kind of adrenalized by by performing, and you're generalised at a time when most other people are winding down and putting their feet up. So, yes, we're on a slightly different time system. I enjoyed a pint after the show, definitely. But you have to just be careful not to enjoy it too much, really. You can then do that every night and then
get crazy.
It gets expensive, basically.
Yeah.
In the West End, if you're having a pint in Totnes, it'd be almost worth getting on the train to Totnes for the pint, to be honest. From what I've heard.
Oh, it's absolutely true. But isn't it? It strikes me, though, that it's a kind of very social domain. I mean, obviously, all these people working together is a kind of mini family in the West End. Did you ever meet the composers of Mamma Mia? Björn, and what's the other one? Dan?
Yes, Benny. I did. Benny and Björn. Björn, I kind of almost sort of broke down in emotion when I met him, because one of the songs in the show is Slipping Through My Fingers, which always resonated very strongly with me. It's a show about it's a song about where did the time go with your kids? Did you do all those things that you promised yourself and you promised others that you would do, and then suddenly they're gone? And I felt that very sort of, I especially felt that when I dropped off my eldest daughter at the time to university for the first time. We left her there, and I just felt sort of huge emotion about that. And that song really, and every night, still, even after doing it for 11 years, that song really moved me. And I told him, and he was sweet, and his met him and his wife, and he was lovely, and he said, yes, that was very much our experience, which is lovely. Benny, I had a slightly different experience with. I sort of thrust myself at him. Cheryl and my wife, we were at I conducted the 10th anniversary show, and he was there, and I went and sort of just interrupted a conversation he was having. I said, hi, I was your conductor tonight. And he sort of just looked at me and just sort of then looked away and carried on the conversation.
Oh, my.
So, okay, fine. But at least we tried, I think I would have regretted not trying.
Oh, but no, I think, it, I think
I'm
it's...
I'm sure he's a lovely person, but I did rather... heavy-handedly interrupt his conversation.
I applaud you. In fact, hang on a second, you're going to get the K-Cole hooter. Because that's the sort of behaviour I absolutely love. I like a little bit of that. Now, I know that after 11 years in the West End, you made a very bold and decisive decision to study again at the Central School of Speech and Drama. I think you got a distinction, an MA with a distinction. So I'd like to know a little bit about that journey. And it must have been a bit scary bananas to kind of go from, this full-time job and a very prestigious job as well in music to completely be free-flying sort of thing in a completely new universe with students. How was that? You're brave, actually. You are brave. You've just demonstrated that your bravery by going up to... I gave you the hooter for that. I give you another hooter. I give you another hooter for doing this course. That's for the Central School of Speech and Drama. Was it difficult but amazing, or how was it, actually, just to be a student?
It was absolutely all that I wanted. But in a very different way than I expected. In Mamma Mia, I always had a fantasy, when I took the job, that my daytimes would be full of doing my own stuff and just going into the show in the evenings, but actually reality was very different. And it's, as assistant musical director, you're pretty involved daytimes as well. And so, and also, you know, there's not really room for, I mean, it's a great show, and it's a very creative show, and I'm very proud of it. Not that I created it, but I'm proud to have been involved.
Of course.
But, you know, working on it, I was, you know, I'm basically a cog in the machine, which is fine. That's what it needs. But I just felt my own creative side just sort of shrinking away. And I think there was a sort of epiphany night. I went to see a show with a friend. A friend was the movement director on this show, and it was Mark Rylance. Show in the West End about, I wish I could remember the name of it, about a king who hired I think it was a contralto singer, sort of locked him up basically to sing a thing to order. And it was a really beautiful, and it was basically, it started at the Globe and the Sam Wanamaker Theatre, and it was, which is, you know, basically all candlelit. And, you know, they translated that to the West End as a candlelit show. I mean, they sort of cheated with a bit of electricity here and there, but broadly it was just you walked in, it was sort of festooned with candles. And I just suddenly had a moment of pain. I thought, I just want to be involved in creating something sort of, I suppose, like that, you know, that just that rich feast. You know, they had a live kind of early instrument ensemble on stage, and live singing, just a feast. And within a few weeks, I'd sort of found this course. It was quite high. I wanted to connect with theatre, and obviously I wanted to, you know, my ambition at the time was to really do more composing for theatre. I used to do a lot in the early days when I in the Fringe Theatre Company, where I met Cheryl. You know, we were sort of, it was an incredibly creative, broke time in my life. We just hang around doing mad things, you know. So I just wanted to reconnect with that. And, you know, there were a few courses that seemed to work, and there was actually even one in Finland, which I was sort of vaguely tempted by. But this was the course is sonography, which is basically, it's sort of kind of theatre design, but it's much more a global look at staging, or sort of creating space for performance, and a very wide ranging course with loads of disciplines. You know, almost every week we were being shown something different. It might have been hacking electronic toys, or it might have been computer design, or, you know, for one mad stressful week we did this Japanese dance thing called Buto, which is basically, it's kind of ugly dancing. You know, it's very, very, it's a reaction to the sort of pretty Japanese aesthetic, sort of post-war style. You're given instructions, and you have to crawl around and just be very elemental. My goodness, that's not me. I think I deserve a cake or a honk for actually.
Let me give you a honk for that. Hang on.
Even turning up to that one.
That sounds really exciting.
Discovering myself as an artist, which is, my career has been broadly about being, you know, working on other people's material, being a sideman, to various projects, or being a sort of, or producing music, sort of the other side of the glass, as it were.
Yeah.
So I think it was really, I wanted to see if I could step forward and be, have an artistic presence myself. And, I went to the degree show the year before, because the tutor invited me along, so to come along and have a look. And I walked into this absolutely insane room with one person stacking single sheets of paper, moving from one side of the table to another. There was a woman screaming behind a window.
Oh, my God.
there was another woman sitting at a bench peeling oranges and throwing them in a basket.
This sounds like Totnes.
Yes, so your local shop.
Welcome to my world.
And I just thought, oh my God, what have I let myself in for? This is ridiculous. How am I possibly going to be contributing to this? What would I do, you know? And a year later, there I was doing my own mad thing. I sort of set up some cassette loops of bits of silence I'd found on cassettes, or me just about to sing as a 9-year-old boy. And all sorts of things looping around, and I made a plaster cast of a cassette recorder, and you had to hit it with a stick.
I saw that.
Enormous sound, you know.
Yeah.
And there I was being sort of, you know, I mean, I think mine was a reasonably sedate contribution, but it was still, for me, it was relatively bonkers. So, you know, and, you know, I'd done the whole year, been through this, you know, and I look back on it, and, you know, I'm amazed that I did it, really.
I think it's absolutely fantastic that you pushed yourself. And also, it is so brave to come out of that comfort zone, but I really do applaud you, Alison. Now, we're slightly running out of time, so I wanted to just get a mention about your, because you said how moved you were about that song on Mamma Mia, so I thought let's end this conversation with just a few words about New York, your kids and Cheryl. I know you need an hour or probably 3 days to talk about that subject, but we've got a minute to talk about it, so just to kind of say a little bit about, because I really wanted to touch on the All Saints sessions, but we really have run out of time. So maybe just tell me how they are involved in your musical life.
So I have my wife, Cheryl Moskowitz, who's an incredible poet, and we do stuff together, sort of poetry and electronics, and do little weird things. Which we call the All Saints Sessions, and it's a lovely creative thing. And I have three amazing children.
Yay!
Alice and George, who are in New York. Alice is a therapist. Going to get married in October.
Oh, wow, congratulations.
Which is amazing. George is a filmmaker. Lives in Brooklyn, and incredible musician as well. And our youngest daughter, Martha, is in publishing, and she's in London, and she's also doing incredibly well. She's sort of chosen a path and is just advancing steadily through it. So, and they're all incredibly musical. I mean, in a way, they're much more musical than me, intuitively. You know, I sang for Cheryl's 60th, I actually sang a Van Morrison song, which was, I think, deserves a cake honk.
Here we go. Hang on, another honk for you.
I'm really not a singer. And Alice and Martha had to coach me on, I tried phrasing. It was Brown Eyed Girl, and the phrasing of the words and the music, at the same time as playing the piano, incredibly hard. And I sort of gained huge respect for Van after that. they coached me in every single, they just instinctively knew all the right accents and the placing of the words, and they're just all three have a really great musicality. So that's lovely. I mean, whether or not they perform music or not, they're just steeped in music and
exactly. Yeah, music, words and poetry. And on that note, we have to say goodbye to you. But Alistair Gavin, thank you so much. You get so many bells and hoots for being so kind and generous to come on the show, but also showing the way to all of us, because we all of us have to be brave, and you got courage right there as your middle name. So thank you, Alistair.
Well, thanks for having me on, as they say in CNN. it's been lovely, Julie. Thank you.
All the best. Take good care and give my love to your family. To Cheryl and everybody.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
See ya.
Bye. Oh, the wonderful Alistair. I like the way he liked the hoots. That's great. He got loads of mad cake-hole hoots. Let's have a little bit of Nick Cave to take us up to Live Talk. He doesn't want to come on. Do you want to come, Nick Cave? No, he does. I think he does.
Pass me that lovely little gun, my dear, my darling one. The cleaners are coming one by one. You don't even wanna let them start. Knocking now upon your door, they measure the room, they know the score. They're mopping up the butcher's floor of your broken little heart. Us now for what we've done. Started out as a bit of fun. Here, take these before we run away. The keys to the gulag.
That was Nick Cave.
Hello.
And the Reels. Hello, good morning. Let me just, Nick Cave, you've got to go. Nick's on the song, but he's got to go. Because we're in Frome. Hello, Frome. How are you?
Frome is excellent, very sunny. Yeah, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fabulously, yeah. Hang on, let me make you even louder. Hang on. Oh, wrong way. Yeah, got you. So is it Jolly Japes in Frome today then, is it?
I've been everywhere this morning. It's good, yeah. You know, everyone in the shops is saying hello and asking how you are, and it's, you know, it's good. It's a good community feel in Frome today.
Excellent. Now, can I just ask
since the flies went.
Oh, since the flies?
Since the flies went. Everyone's much happier since the swarm of flies have left us.
Thank God for that. The last time I spoke to you, Liv, you were just about to step on stage and start your rehearsal with Beryl the Feral. How did that go?
It was nice. It was quite early days. We're making a show, so it was a village hall stage. But it was good. I had a bit of a cold and a sore throat, and I couldn't speak very well, so it was a bit unfortunate. It was lovely to see Beryl the Feral, and I did say that you would love to have her on the show. But it was great to hang out and make work. So we're at the beginning, an unfolding of a show.
How does that make you feel at the beginning? Is it very nerve-wracking at the beginning for you?
I'm very nervous, and I seem to be procrastinating. procrastinating a lot, which isn't like me. So I sticking lots of stickers on my phone whilst sitting in the conservatory and things like that. So yeah, I've got to make a show, but I am quite unsure of how to begin or how it's going to work at the moment. But I suspect that's kind of normal to the process. Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, the whole thing is terrifying. But anyway, that's another story. I think the starting of any project is quite hard, unless you've got a whole huddle of people behind you and everyone's shouting ideas and you're just feeling enormously supported. But I think doing your own show is very, it's so kind of personal and fragile, if you like, because yeah, it's really about you. But I know you'll pull it off and it will be amazing. So well done.
Yes, I mean, yes, I have to live up to my own expectations, which is always quite difficult. But yeah, how are you, Julie?
I'm okay. I'm just, you know, I made this big decision that the cake hole will be for another week and then I'll be free as a little birdie. So that's...
Oh, it's so sad for the world, but obviously, is it good for you?
I think I've done a whole year on the cake hole and it's been absolutely fantastic. And I can't say how fantasimondo amazing that the people at Sound are. I can't say enough of that because they really are. They just let you evolve and let you create. And they just like a big open window of you do whatever you want. I mean, I think I couldn't have I anticipated or expected anything more than that. And they just gave me the stage. So I feel very, you know, happy to have all these podcasts and a body of work. But I think the time has probably come to maybe get out the doors and sort of do different things and different projects. That's what I'd like to do. But now we need some of your poetry to inspire our futures.
Yeah.
Tell us what we're going to hear today.
Well, I wanted to just check with you because obviously I'm just it could be anything, couldn't it? I wanted to do something about Mary, but I've done it before a long time ago with you and I didn't know if it's the same audience. No. Is that all right? Would
Absolutely.
That be okay?
Yeah, please.
This is one of my favourite recent poems that I've written and I wrote it about my stay in hospital over the summer and the wonderful woman who was in the bed opposite me one night I tried to break us out of the hospital. I think that's important to mention. It wasn't quite a lot of drugs, but I really had enough, and obviously the social distancing was still in place as well. So this is about the conversation I had to try and convince her, and it's called There's Something About Mary. I sat socially distanced at the end of your bed and said, let's get out of here, Mary. Disconnect your fluids. I'll put on my Asda disco pyjamas. You can push your own wheelchair for once. It's time to do a One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest on the gastro ward. We don't need Jack Nicholson off his meds or a 7-foot-tall Indian chief to smash through the wall. You can survive without solid food. And I'm the only one who can open the door. And then it's just one shiny disinfected hall leading to just one more. And we are sailing, cannulas trailing, through the glass turnstile that hasn't moved since COVID, past the huddled smokers clinging to their catheters, outside to where the sky meets the car park, the open fields kiss the skylark. We can find that rowan tree by the bin, let the drizzle swizzle our sweat sour skin, wrap our pincushion atrophied arms around the trunk, pull down our masks and breathe her in, because we are not dead yet, are we? Mary smiles at me. She is 22 and has the rare genetic disease Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. She can't eat. Her bones move about like barrels on a boat. She's lost 4 stone in the last 3 months, and this morning they dislocated her shoulders, putting her in the MRI machine. So at 7 a.m. in the hospital, at 7 a.m. we have not left the hospital. As a disposable tsunami breaks over every ward, aprons snap, bins clonk, visors stream, masks steam out like ticker tape. The earth shudders. Plastic rains in here and it makes everyone feel sicker. There are no flowers allowed, nothing living that can carry the virus, no air conditioning. The fruit cocktail comes out of a tin. I can't even feel the rain when I stick my fingers out the safety window. I feel so disconnected, it makes my stomach twist. Mary asks if I'm all right. It's Friday night and we are taking bets on her blood sugar. How dangerously low is it tonight? How much liquid glucose is she going to have to inject into her tonsils before they leave her alone? 4.3 today, safe for a few hours. Everyone is cheering. Mary is doing air high fives with the orderlies. Arnold is dancing in the aisles with a blood pressure machine. I love humans. You know, sometimes I forget in all the fear and busyness that we're just Joni Mitchell lyrics, not just Big Bang Millionaire shortbread, not just supreme guilt gangsters gasping for breath in a hospital bed, but the atoms of everything, as much a part of nature as the circling seagulls. I look at Mary with her feeding tube, laughing on the phone to her boyfriend, sipping high-calorie energy drink, then vomiting it back up again, plotting each tiny success, sifting for diamonds in every coal sack setback. It's like evolution is holding her up in front of me and saying, this is one of my finest humans. She might look broken to you, but I made her, and I'm as proud as a mother bear. Mary looks at me determined. So what if they take your colon, she says. You can still be happy. You can still have a great life. And she's right. It's what we all have to do. So I lie back into my sweaty sheets that I've been sticking to all week and think maybe Arnold should take the Earth's vitals. I mean, her oxygen levels seem pretty low. Her UK temp is spiking at 32, and you only have to read the news or smell the air to realise our home is pretty sick too. And maybe that's our fault. But if COVID has taught us anything, it's that nature keeps on chucking out Marys and dandelions and brimstones like it's Monday morning, so neither of them get my pity. They're both just trying to find quality of life until they get to be stardust again.
Wow. I can't even give you a ding because it's just too moving. Oh, my God. Liv, is that in your show, that poem?
Yes.
Oh, God, yes, I was going to say it has show. To be. That is yes. absolutely incredible. It's so powerful. And, oh,
yeah. I love that poem. I think it's one of my favourite ones I've written in the last year. But it just keeps on reinforcing in me the kind of attitude that I think Mary kind of taught me of, like, seeking quality of life, even if you don't have the supposed life that, other people have, or the supposed health that people have. But also just, about how, just seek for the positivity and the moments of joy. And, even the Earth is doing Beltane right now, it's doing spring. It's like, yes, it might be struggling, but it's still trying to have a good time. And and I think that that's just really pertinent for me.
What it also tells me is that, wow, even if people just came to see that one poem, which they're not, they're going to see a whole show, that must inject you with confidence, because that poem alone can carry your show, Live Talk. So,
well, the show's about high flu, really. So yeah. it's just about the challenge is I've got all the component parts, I've got all the all the bits of it. It's just how to weave it together.
Of course. So that's always a difficulty, isn't it?
So that's the difficult bit. So yes, I'm really confident in the strength of the poems, and I'm really confident in the strength of the high flu project and the films. And I'm confident in the participation. It's just how to kind of make it fit together and to work.
I totally understand. Exactly.
So I guess I've just got to get on with it. I've just got this massive to-do list of things I have to do. And I need to do it. I'm very good at working usually. So I probably just need a holiday, Julie. That's what it is. A holiday before I start. But
I think so. I think a lot of people are feeling that kind of, I just need some time near the water. I need to be walking in the woods, and I just need some alone time and all of that. I think
lying on my back in the daisies, it's that kind of thing.
Absolutely, that in itself,
with the warm sun, not the Arctic wind.
Exactly.
Not the snow in the Lake District in May.
Oh God, please!
Skiers happy, but
I can't even. I can't even think about it. It will send me over the edge. Liv Talk, we have run out of time, but I just wanted to say thank you so much for being on our show today.
So it's last week, then the last week, then?
Yeah,
it's our Friday.
Well, can we have a party next Friday?
Let's have a party. Let's bring out the big guns. Yeah.
Okay.
I can do all the swearing, can't I?
Yeah. Ooh, don't say that.
I won't. I'm joking.
Why don't you come on the... should we bring you on the 9:20 slot so we've got 20 minutes of you? How about that?
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah, let's do it. Let's do that.
Okay, that's a deal. Yeah. That's a deal. All right, Liv, have the most amazing weekend and all my love from Totnes, all of us here. Thank
and
you so much.
And Froome sends its love back to Totnes. It's Thank just like a small, quirky town loving. Okay.
Take good care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
The fab Liv talk. So I've had an amazing time with Alistair Gavin and Liv talk. Wow. What more could I possibly want? Let's have a little bit of the Cranberries, shall we, to say ta-ta. I'll be back on Monday at 9 o'clock for a whole week of more guests, and it will be time to hang my microphone up. Oh, my God. See ya. Have a wonderful weekend.
Just a game to you.